I'm Barry Farrell, Premier of the State, and you're listening to Who's Playing Who.
What up, I'm Benji Marshall.
I'm Gareth Ellis.
I'm Wally Tecuri. And you're listening to Who's Playing Who.
Wow, winning.
And welcome to another action-packed, hard-hitting episode of Who's Playing Who. I'm Adrian McMurray, and thank you for joining us for yet another outstanding episode of this humble little podcast. And it is episode 59. Welcome to it. We did have another break last week. If you are a keen fan of the podcast, you will have noticed that we weren't on for a week. That was because, well, Matt and I were at the golf, and we forgot, well, I forgot at least completely all about it, that we would be there. And that's what happens when you are at the golf for, well, looked like 12-hour days most of the week. It was a busy time, but we're here back nonetheless with a, I say, different-looking lineup tonight. It's an experimental lineup, but I like the look of it. So first of all, of course, riding shotgun, Who's Playing Who co-owner Matthew Trodden.
Thanks, Adrian. It's wonderful to be back after our little foray into golf media. And hopefully everyone enjoys the penultimate to Christmas podcast.
It should be one of the greats. And the third and final addition to the team tonight, I can't remember the last time when we heard from him was, but it's great to have him back on board. It's David Shipton.
Hey guys, thank you very much for having me again. It's a pleasure to be back here after prolonged absence. I think I may have taken a trip to the Gold Coast in that time, but we won't speak about that again. But yeah, so good to be back.
Beautiful stuff. And you can read Shippy's latest blog up on the website. It has gone gangbusters. Plenty of people reading it and liking it, which is great to see. He recapped the rugby, the spring tour, which was a nice little read there. So hop along to whosplayingwho.net if you want to check that out. But we'll get into the show now. We are down on troops, but I think it's going to be a fantastic show. So we'll start with the hot/mild topics. These ones have been simmering along over the last week or so. And we'll start with Israel Folau. He has turned his back on rugby league and signed with the Waratahs. It's a one-year deal from memory and probably heavily backed up by the ARU, I dare say. So we'll get your opinion first, Matt. What do you think about Israel to the Waratahs?
From a rugby league perspective, it's a little bit disappointing that they couldn't sort something out to get him here. But I think good luck to him. I think he will be a success at some level in rugby union. He's definitely got obviously the rugby league skills, the ball skills. And I think the AFL stint would have definitely helped his kicking, which will probably help should he be playing in the back three for the Waratahs and maybe even the Wallabies. I mean, I think it might be a bit early to pick him in the Wallabies this season, but if he chooses to stay beyond the one-season deal, I think there's definitely a Wallaby jersey in it for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm probably of the opinion that they'll they might not pick him for the Lions, but they'll pick him certainly at some point during 2013. Just to, you know, I think purely to have him in the team, just alone, you know, to get bums on seats and whatnot. So, we'll get Shippy's opinion now. You are, of course, a huge rugby fan, and you know, your thoughts on Israel.
Yeah, I just going back a bit earlier, he is getting a big top-up from the ARU, reportedly in the vicinity of 400,000, and he's getting about 200,000 from the Waratahs. So rumour has it he's on about 600,000. So that's, you know, puts him up there as one of the highest-paid Australian rugby players. But I think it's a good thing, and I think he can definitely have a good effect on the game, especially with his aerial skills, with his catching and whatnot. It's something that you don't often see in rugby union, is that rugby league style cross-field kick. So I don't know, maybe he might have a big impact on the game, maybe not, but he's certainly got all the skills to definitely did play really well for the Waratahs. Whether or not he'll make the Wallabies, well, got about 15 games before the Lions tour. Is that enough? Probably not. But yeah, he'll be up to speed pretty quickly, and he'll be all right. So should be good.
Yeah, I was hearing something today that he's got back to about 100 kilos, and he's aiming to get to around 103 before the first game of the season next year. Now, having 103 kilos out on the wing, that's pretty handy. I don't know what Jonah was back when he was playing, but I'd guess it'd be sort of in the similar vicinity.
Well, I think to put it into perspective, I think Nonu and Sonny Bill were around about 106, 107, 108, 109, maybe.
Yep.
So he's pretty big. He's pretty big.
Mm.
Yeah.
No denying that. He is a giant in every sense of the word. Well, maybe not one anymore.
Not anymore.
Ouch. Sorry, James. That wasn't intentional. We'll move on now to Spurs. Nice segue. AFL. Kurt Tippett's finally got his preferred move. He's moved to the home of the Premiers. Now, this is absolutely ridiculous. Kurt Tippett signed with the Swans. Now, interestingly, he won't be able to play until round 11, I think, or after. I think he's suspended for the first 11 rounds of the competition. He won't be able to play in the preseason NAB Cup either. Now, really, the Swans, I didn't think they'd win a premiership just quite yet. I thought they needed a big tall forward just to fill that void. I think that was the last piece of the puzzle. And the fact that he's coming there now, they've just won a premiership, and he's there as well. He can play a bit of ruck. He can fill a lot of gaps for them, and he's probably one of the elite players in the game. It just astounds me that, first of all, they've been able to fit him into their salary cap, and secondly, that this is actually happening. I does not compute in my mind how this could happen. So can you see him being a success there at the Swans, Matt?
Oh, I think so. I mean, he's obviously got a lot of talent, and they've always been ones to kind of develop young players and try to bring players through, to get them when they're young, and build a team mentality. So I mean, they haven't really lost many people from last year, and I think they'll still be a massive force, and he'll only add to that. You know, that Premier, they weren't expected to win the Premiership when they did. They were probably, a lot of people thought, a few years away from that with the squad they've got, and surely it could. I wouldn't like to say the word dynasty in that sense, because, you know, anything can happen. One year, one person gets injured and the whole year can die. But, you know, they've got a chance with him moving to that club to be a real force long term, I reckon.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's only 25 at the moment, so he's got plenty of good years ahead of him. At least, he's probably entering his peak right now, probably for another 5 years. So they've got him at just the perfect time. And he pretty much is the finished article. And I know he'll be incredibly frustrated, but I don't think him missing the first 11 weeks is necessarily such a bad thing. Because, first of all, it'll give him time to, you know, get used to his new surroundings, work his way into the Swans sort of setup. And then also, the back end of the season, headed into the finals, they've got a player, an elite player, that hasn't played for the first half of the competition, fresh, ready to go. I think it's almost the perfect scenario.
Yeah, if they play well in the first half of the season, he'll be a great addition when they have traditionally had a few players towards the back end of the season tire out a bit and have to rest. So I think it would be very good for them.
There you go. We're just kicking goals here with the AFL stuff. We'll move on now. Manchester United are on their way out to Australia, and more specifically Sydney, next July 30th, I believe, Saturday night, 7:30, ANZ Stadium. The tickets have gone absolutely crazy. First-hand experience. I logged on to the website on the first day, the pre-sale, to football family members or whatever they're called. Got my code out, thought, okay, I'll just casually buy a couple of tickets, and was soon met with the realization that I could only buy singles only. And today, when they went on sale to the public, 2 minutes, would you believe it? 2 minutes, and that allocation was gone as well. There was a bizarre sort of moment during the middle of the day when you could enter the code Manchester and you could just buy tickets at your leisure. I'm not entirely sure what their deal is with how they're doing this, but whatever. They're slowly dripping these tickets out, and there's another batch to come out next April, I believe. So it's all happening. ANZ Stadium are installing extra seating for the event to bring the stadium to 84,000 or thereabouts. But Manchester United coming out to Australia. Shippy, did you manage to get a ticket at all?
Oh, mate, look, with the exchange rate, it's like millions of dollars, so no. No. I was looking into it. I really would have been keen to go, but was not organized enough, obviously. Tickets went before I even knew they were on sale. So,
but generally speaking, you excited that? Well, I guess you can't. You're not. You know, you're not even in the same city. But
No. We're stoked down here. I mean, this is probably the closest Manchester United will get for the next, you know, 10 years or so. And gonna have to steal a bit of your glory here. But yeah, no. We're really, really excited for this. Especially, I'm really excited because football doesn't get a lot of attention here in New Zealand. It's got more now with the Phoenix and with the obviously the World Cup a few years ago. But I'm really excited. And should be a good game. Good to have all the stars down here. Should be nice.
That's it. And Matt, they will be taking on the A-League All-Stars, of course. Do you like the concept?
Oh, I do. I think it's something the MLS have jumped on. We seem to be honest that we're copying their ideas, but they've been successful with it, getting a touring team, whether it be one of the big English clubs most of the time, and putting an all-star type lineup against them. And I think it helps drum up support for the A-League as a whole within the country, and I think that can only be a good thing, really, seeing Del Piero, Heskey, Moy, Ono kind of all in one team, Archie Thompson, that kind of lineup, I think could only do good things for the perception of the A-League and its quality.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I'm just excited to be seeing United and secondly, the A-League 11 as well. It's going to be a great night. Cannot wait. And I'm sure we'll be hearing plenty more about it in the next sort of 6 or 7 months, or can't even work out how far away it is. That's how exciting it is. But we will be putting together our own A-League 11s up on the site in the next coming days, so make sure you check that out and see what you have to think about our own teams. I know my team at the moment is comprised of 10 centre forwards, so maybe they won't go with that, but we'll see. Anyway, another beautiful segue. That's it for the Hot Topics. We're moving right into the A-League, and our match of the round this week is the Sydney Derby, of course. This one's at the SFS Saturday night, or Allianz Stadium, sorry. Saturday night, 7:45 kickoff. Matt, is it time for the Wanderers to extract revenge?
Most definitely. I was shattered to have missed the first Derby Live. Adrian and I, we will both be attending this one in the middle of the RBB. And I think the way they performed, we didn't see the whole game against the Roar, but it seemed they're kind of in that hanging on style, which they've played quite well away from home, where they just stay in the game, have very resolute defence. Aaron Moy will be back, which will be a big boost for them. He was spectacular in his starts for the Socceroos over in the East Asian qualifiers. So I really think it's their chance. Sydney may have had a win last week, but I still think they're probably not performing as well as they would like to. And the Frank Farina, both teams would be very pumped up, but I think this may be the chance the Wanderers have to really make a name for themselves and stay in that top six, because amazingly, their form hasn't been, I don't think they've really hit top form. They haven't had a very spectacular 90 minutes, full 90 minutes yet, and yet they sit fourth. So, you know, anything in this competition can happen. They just have to get into those finals and they can beat anyone. So I really, really think this could be there. If they take their chances, if they're in front of goal, they could cause Sydney some trouble.
The man that scored the only game in the first derby earlier this season, Alessandro Del Piero, he is under an injury cloud. Say that again, injury cloud. And can't speak. And but he is pressing to play. Of course, he would love to play in such a big game. He didn't travel to Wellington. But David, did you catch much of the game between the Phoenix and Sydney FC? And did you like what you, did you like what you saw from Sydney?
Well, yeah, I did catch a bit of the game. And no, I didn't, because the Phoenix lost. So I Sydney just cheated and just absolutely, worst ref ever. Nah, I'm fucking joking. But no, I did like what I see. I mean, it was hard to really tell how good they were because the Phoenix weren't exactly seeing the world alight. But I think, it'll be good. They seem like a relatively organized team, and certainly with Del Piero back in there, they'll have that X factor back. And wouldn't it be great, for them to make the finals and to get, relatively deep in there, just for the exposure of the game again? It'll be very, very good to see. I'm personally a little devastated that the Phoenix aren't doing as well as they probably should have. But oh well, we'll get over that sometime. Go see a therapist maybe. But
okay, and you're tipping in this one?
Pick the Wanderers for that one.
Good man. Right answer. I'm going to go Wanderers as well, purely because that's who I'm tipping.
Good reason.
Yeah, I'm not going to tip Sydney. Look, in other games, when Sydney FC aren't playing Wanderers, that they can go for them. No problems. But in this one, Wanderers is where it's at. Let's move on to the Premier League now. And our match of the round, we've chosen this one. Tottenham Hotspur host Swansea at White Hart Lane. Probably the best of a really ordinary round of fixtures, really. Should be an interesting contest. Two sides with... they're both coming off a loss. Of course, Tottenham going down 2-1 in injury time to Everton. Nikita Jelovic just slotting one home there to give them the most unlikely of victories. And Norwich knocked off Swansea in a 7-goal thriller there. It was actually a very good game, actually. And Swansea are performing a lot better than I think many of us thought. They had a great start to the season. They sort of petered out, but they're coming back now. And Michael Laudrup is doing a great job. Michu continues to score. And I am very filthy that I punted him from my Fantasy Premier League team too early in the season. He's now the leading midfielder in that competition. But that's an aside. We put fantasy aside for this. Who are we tipping here? Matt, we'll go to you.
I think Tottenham will probably just be too good in this one. Swansea have had a good start to the year, but I think conceding 4 goals to Norwich is probably a sign their defence is starting to weaken a bit. And I'd say Tottenham will be smarting definitely from that loss to Everton because they dominated that game, led 1-0 for the majority. I think they might have led 1-0 until 90 minutes. And then, of course, Pienaar scored and Jelovic grabbed the winner late. So I think Tottenham might just have too good. Hopefully Gareth Bale can return from injury. And not only, as we mentioned, to help my fantasy team, but also just because I think he adds that X factor down the left side and in their midfield.
He does. He does so much. He does more than your typical winger. He can hold the ball up well.
He's not. He plays as a winger, but he does. He pretty much plays as a midfielder that hangs on the wing. He's a box to box midfield. Box to box midfielder that plays on the wing, more or less.
Exactly. Yeah. So. Great to see him back as well. Tip from you, David.
Yeah, I think Tottenham will definitely take this one. They've got some big game experience with being in the top band for the last couple of years. I think they'll know how to close out the game. They'll be smarting from the loss the other day, and so they'll be throwing everything at this game. And I have a feeling that they'll be just good enough to take this one. A little bit more experience, so I'll count in my favour.
Beautiful. I'm going to be bold here. I'm going to say 3-1 to Tottenham Hotspur, and I think Sigurdsson will get on the scorecard against the club he was loaned out to last season in Swansea. So there you go. That's bold, but we'll be replaying this clip if it indeed comes true next week. And if not, well, we just won't mention it. Now, Arsenal, we're going to talk about them quickly. They had a monumental collapse today in the League Cup, going down to Bradford in penalties. Now, Bradford are a League Two side, or no, League One side? Which one?
League Two.
League Two side.
They are the, as this morning announced, the 72nd ranked side in English football.
There you go. So, and Arsenal played pretty much a full strength lineup there. So, I actually think that this might be the wake up call that they needed if they didn't already. A lot of people have been calling for Arsene Wenger's head, but I think that this could, with the January transfer window looming, this could spark them into action. Some of the names bantered around, Huntelaar, Llorente, and also Mario Götze, have been mentioned, you know, sort of linked with Arsenal in the transfer rumours. Especially Huntelaar and Llorente are coming. They've got 6 months left on their contract. If they remain at their current clubs at the end of the season, they will walk free in the summer. So this is their respective club's last chance to sell up. And I think they just might do so to Arsenal or some other club. Anyway, so I think this will be, just like the 8-2 was the wake-up call, he needed to sign Arteta, Per Mertesacker, a couple of the other guys that he did late in last year's summer window. I think this will be the wake-up call he needs. Your thoughts there?
I agree. I think the they've always seemed to, the last few years, have had a side of very good young players, a lot of young English players as well, who just don't seem to have made that step yet. They're great attacking players, the Wilshires, the Walcott, the Oxlade-Chamberlain style. They've got so many good attacking players that can't seem to make that next step. But away, losing to a side like Bradford, it showed that their defence probably wasn't up to it, as good as Vermaelen is, and he was the goal scorer. I still think it might just, yeah, I agree, the wake-up call that they will need. And a lot of these young people, young kids, will probably use it as a way of kind of dropping their ego a little bit and hopefully for the greater good for Arsenal. Because I think Arsenal successful is great entertaining football. There is talk that Henry will return on loan again in January as well, which could help with the development of these young players, I think, too.
Absolutely, yeah. And also the other thing is that they are completely sweet off the field financially. They're set, but interesting, the last game as a Highbury club, when they were based at their old stadium before they moved to the Emirates, was the Champions League final in 2006, I think it was, against Barca. Was it 06? Somewhere around there anyway.
Yeah, it was 06, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's sort of like a bit of symbolism there as to how they've sort of gone downhill since they moved to the Emirates. But anyway, they're sweet financially now, I think, and they need to move and act fast in the transfer window if they're going to qualify for Europe again, because I don't think they're going to win the Champions League and do a Chelsea unless no chance. All right, let's move on to the cricket now. And since our last podcast, Ricky Ponting did announce his retirement and subsequently retired. That's how long ago since we've done a podcast. And Matt thought he'd take this opportunity to say a few words. Oh, God, it sounds like he's died or something. just to speak about the career of Ricky Ponting.
Yep, I just wanted to be quick, obviously, but he a lot of people have called him the greatest batsman since Bradford. Bradman. Greatest batsman since Bradman. And from a personal point of view, I don't think I've seen a better, more talented batsman. As a leader, he was always the best leader. Tactically, there's been doubts, and I myself have doubted at times his tactical captaincy, but he's a great leader just on and off the field. And a show of how a player can mature in the public eye, as he did, everyone within cricket circles will remember the time, that press conference with the black eye after a bit of a stink at the Bourbon in the cross. And I really think it's a great show of how a player can mature and use his cricket to mature, because that really spurred him on the field. And I just think he's just such a loss, not just with the bat as well, but he's probably the best fieldsman in the slips, in the infield, that I've ever seen. He'll hit the stumps anytime he throws. I rarely saw him drop a catch in the slips, and I really think it'd be a massive loss to the side. But I guess it was the right time to go, and we did see him a couple of times out at the golf that we're working at, and saw a lot of people go up and actually thank him. And he's very humble man, as much as he did have a bit of aggro in him, but he was a very humble man. And I think a lot of people appreciate what he's done for Australian cricket, myself included. And I know I still remember the time I did see him score 100 at the SCG against South Africa, and it was a very, very good one, very entertaining batsman. And, you know, he'll be sorely missed, but hopefully his replacement, Phil Hughes, can replicate some of what he's done in Test cricket.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think he retired for me at the perfect time. Like, he still had his reputation pretty much intact. And I know, coming from a non-Australian perspective, seeing, like, breaking that opening partnership and then seeing Ponting come in, you kind of head sunk a little bit and said, oh, well, here you go, here comes Ponting. He was just such a great batsman. He was a really good guy, and one of the best, definitely one of the greatest ever to have played the game.
Great player, and I just echo everything you guys said. I think he will eventually, when we look back at his career, he will be up there with the greats. And yeah, nothing more to add, really. Fitting tribute to a great cricketer. We look ahead now to, as Matt alluded to, the next test series, the Sri Lankans. They've come to town, and we kick things off in Hobart on Friday. So, Matt, where can you see this one going?
I honestly think Australia should win this game if they want to have any hope of beating India in India and then England in England. In the test series, they really should be winning this game and winning it quite handsomely. I mean, it's going to be a green top, most likely, down in Hobart, which will help our bowlers, I think. Could be a big opportunity for Ben Hilfenhaus to find some form again. He struggled early this summer, probably lacking a bit in first-class bowling after having to play in the Champions League and the T20 stuff. So I really hope he does well down in Hobart. And I mean, Sri Lanka are in different form. They had a draw in Test series against New Zealand. Their bowlers actually got carted in Canberra last week in the Chairman's 11 game. So I really see this as a great opportunity for the Australian batsmen to get some form ahead of that tour to India in the Ashes. I mentioned Phil Hughes before. I really hope he gets some runs down in Hobart. And I really think David Warner will be a batsman that could change this Test series, because against a less than confident Sri Lankan attacker, the quick attack at least, Herath the spinner is a very good bowler. But their pace attack isn't as great. I think Warner could do some big damage in this this series if he gets going early. And I'm hoping Australia can win. I'd have to say 3-0 would be the expectation.
Yeah, that's probably a fair point. Now, David, your countrymen, the South African national side, they did manage to get the win here in Perth, take the series, reclaim the giant mace as the number one test nation in the world. So good times for them.
But
will Australia bounce back against the Sri Lankans?
Oh, I think, yeah, no. Look, that series that they had against South Africa is very even. You could argue that Australia probably dominated 9 out of the first 11 days and then just had a bad test in the Perth test. But South Africa were really stretched in that test, in the test series. As far as Sri Lanka goes, they're definitely... Look, they're not a brilliant side. They've got some really good players in there, but I don't see them getting anywhere near Australia. The batting wasn't that great against New Zealand. New Zealand's pace bowling attack it's all right. It's getting there. So we've got a young attack, and they're pretty decent. But the problem is that Sri Lanka's very top heavy in a way. Their first four batsmen are really, really good, and then they just fall away after that. And the problem has been that the top four batsmen haven't been up to much in the last 2 hours. So I've just got visions of Australia running through them, especially at a green top in Hobart, running through them, and then David Warner going out and smashing a century, and you know, it'll be over by the third day, I reckon.
Jeez, that's a bold prediction, but one that we certainly agree with. Now let's move on to New Zealand cricket, and there has been a lot of conjecture over there. Ross Taylor, he and the New Zealand cricket, what are they called? New Zealand cricket, I guess.
New Zealand cricket.
All over it. He's been punted as skipper, replaced by opener Brendan McCullum, and the Black Caps, they're off to South Africa. not looking like good times for them, is it?
No, it's not really looking too good as well. So Taylor's not going to South Africa anymore. It's a bit of a shame, really, because he was in very good form. Test-wise, he's averaging, since he took over the captaincy in the last 13 tests, he was averaging nearly 50-odd-ish. And the nearest guy was only averaging about 30. So you can see he's not really going to struggle over there. It's a bit of a shame because they've given it to McCullum, who I think is would make a good captain, but just publicly they've handed him a bit of a mess, and they've handed McCullum a mess, and they've made a bit of a mess of Ross Taylor at the moment. So it's a bit of a shame. Also, I think McCullum's probably not the best one to have as a test captain. He's a bit too inconsistent, but can't do much about that now. One of the reasons trotted out why they didn't want Ross Taylor was because they thought the workload was a bit too much on him, but then they were happy to give it to Brendan McCullum, all three formats. I didn't quite understand that. But.
No, they seem to have created this disorder in the camp. It seems to me like they're just leading lambs to slaughter pretty much now. Over there, so not great times for cricket in New Zealand, especially with, I mean, we've talked to Tomo about this, that they're looking for alternative summer sports. I mean, come on, they need cricket to succeed,
Yeah. Well, we've got a lot. I guess the most frustrating thing is being a New Zealand cricket fan, is that you can see that we've got a lot of potential in the side, but we never utilize it too well. I mean, look, we had Hobart last year, which everything kind of clicked and we did all right. We had Sri Lanka this year, but really, yeah, it's just massively frustrating because everyone's playing below their potential and no one really can do much about it. Batsmen aren't really scoring our runs. Our biggest strength is our bowling, but they just never have runs to bowl against, so it makes them look bad. But yeah, I guess we've shot ourselves in the foot a bit, but we'll have to pick ourselves up and, yeah, maybe extend the Super 14 season into all year round.
Fair enough. All right, that'll do us for the cricket now. And the NBA we usually chat about at this time, but our main man, Tomo, is not here. Contractually, he was only required to be here for the first podcast of every new series. Now, very rarely does he miss an episode, but he was unavailable tonight, so we'll miss the NBA and, of course, everyone's favourite news segment, the Bobcat Update. He won't be bringing that to you until next week, which we will touch on as well next week's episode very soon. The think tank that Tomo also runs, we won't be doing that because, well, it's Tomo's think tank. We need the man himself, but no matter. We've had a great show now that we're about to wrap up. You can come find us on Facebook, facebook.com/whosplayingwho, or come and follow us on Twitter @whosplayingwho, and all our personal handles are there as well. And of course, our website is whosplayingwho.net, where all our content goes up, and I wouldn't say a heap of articles, but there's a few. And
there's enough.
There's enough. And the quality is what matters. We're more quality over quantity. So check that out when you can. Now, gentlemen, I know you two are very excited about next week, and for good reason, because it is the third annual Who's Playing Who Christmas episode. Matt, what are the sorts of things we can expect on this most celebratory of episodes?
Well, as with the first two episodes, we'll be handing out our presents, and this is really, for some sportsmen, it's what they look forward to every year, is getting the present from Who's Playing Who, and hopefully reclaiming and being able to use that present wisely, because it's helped some great sportsmen over the last couple of years. Wayne Rooney, I remember,
yes,
being great after receiving the present of a goal from yourself, Adrian. So
yep.
I really think that'll be the thing most sportsmen listening to Who's Playing Who will be looking forward to. But we've also got plenty to celebrate after another great year.
That's it. I think we also, last year we attempted to do a bit of a Christmas, not a carol, but a song. I think it was a Mariah Carey song. So you never know what we could dish out next week. I don't know if Shippy signed up to sing, but that might be an interesting time for him.
I'll be doing the lip syncing, so
how do you do lip syncing on a podcast?
You'll see me going there. You'll see me.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Good. No, we'll see. But no one. Anyway.
We'll make it a YouTube special.
That's it.
Syncing.
That's what we'll do. Beautiful work. Well, well done this week. We'll say goodbye to you first, Shippy. Well done on a great episode. You know, you've come out of the wilderness and just knocked it out of the park. We also need your vote for Man of the Pod. Now, if you're not, I don't know if you know how this works, but your nomination for who you thought performed the best on this week's episode.
Well, thank you very much for having me here, guys. Yeah, no, it's been a while since I've been here, and I've really missed it. So my vote would go to Matt. I think he's been excellent in his analysis, and he's just been superb this podcast. Absolute legend. There you go.
That's it. Beautiful. All right, Matt, same to you as well. Another excellent effort, and your vote for Man of the Pod.
Thanks, Adrian. Hopefully I can get everyone back listening again next week for the Christmas episode. I'm going to vote for Shippy, mainly. I think the analysis of not only the New Zealand Test cricket woes there, but also his non-Australian view of Ricky Ponting, it really was a good insight into a man that a lot of Australians thought other countries hated. So, I'm going to vote for Shippy.
Beautiful. I'll go for Shippy as well. Twofold. He's wearing pants and also some great analysis. So well done to you, David. Congratulations. And another great episode. As we've said about 50 times in the last minute, our Christmas episode is coming up next week. Make sure you don't miss it. We'll be back then. But in the meantime, all that matters is who's playing who. You're out of touch. I'm out of time. But I'm out of my head when you're not around. You're out of touch. I'm out of time. But I'm out of my head when you're not around. Oh, 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 oh. Well, it's actually for the weekend ahead, but you know.
Yeah.
Meantime, whatever.